I'm Shelley Schlender. This is Me and My Diabetes, and today we're featuring a Denver metro area doctor who recommends a low-carb, high-fat diet to patients who are struggling with weight loss, heart disease, or diabetes. Here's Jeff Gerber.
Thanks for inviting me, Shelley. I'm Dr. Jeff Gerber. I'm a board-certified family physician. I've been having a general family medicine practice for now over 20 years in the Denver metro area. I reside down in the southern area near Littleton and Highlands Ranch, and my focus is on embracing nutrition as a wonderful tool to help treat and prevent disease and improve the health of my patients.
Well, Jeff Gerber, you don't mean the food pyramid when you talk about nutrition. You're interested in something else.
Yes, well, the food pyramid unfortunately has steered us in the wrong direction. That pyramid actually started back in the 1950s, and it was based on some rather poor science and a belief by the federal government that they were going in the right direction in terms of nutrition. But we look at it as unfortunately a very backwards approach to nutrition. And as a result of these, the food pyramid and these nutritional guidelines, we end up with the official dietary guidelines in 1980 that essentially tell us that saturated fat is unhealthy. It'll lead to heart attack and stroke, and we should avoid saturated fat in the diet and replace it with polyunsaturated oils, what we refer to as manufactured vegetable oils, and or replace it with carbohydrates. The problem with this science is that it was purely a hypothesis, and yet the government latched right onto it. And we have tried for the past 60 years to prove this hypothesis known as the lipid hypothesis, and we have been unable to do so.
Now, the lipid hypothesis states that if you eat fats, you'll get fat. And yet, by having people eat more carbohydrates and cut how much fat that they're eating, has that made people thinner and healthier?
No, it's done, unfortunately, quite the opposite. So one of the other scientific principles, along with the lipid hypothesis, is that of energy balance. And energy balance also ties into what you just said. If you eat fat, you're going to get fat.
Jeff Gerber, I've heard of that energy balance. It's that whatever calories you eat, you'll keep them on your body unless you burn them off with exercise. And you can go to any school, and that's what the children are taught today, is that whatever you eat, it doesn't matter what it is, it matters more how many calories it is. So count your calories and then go run off that food that you just ate. Does it work?
No, it doesn't work. This is based on the principle of physics, or the first law of thermodynamics. And the problem is, this is a very simple law, and it doesn't explain our complicated metabolic system in our body. In fact, one example is that the first law of thermodynamics doesn't explain what makes us hungry. And it's really these complex metabolic pathways, these hormones that interact with the food that we consume, that really determine what makes us fat. It has very little to do with energy balance.
You're talking hormones, you're talking signaling in the body. You think that signals in our bodies may be more important than the number of calories we eat?
Very much so. And this is what has really steered us astray in the last 60 years. And we really need to go back to an older way of eating, when we consumed whole foods, unprocessed foods. And guess what? Those foods tend to have less carbohydrates. And we've changed, we have flipped metabolism upside down, to the point that the predominant food that we consume today in American society is carbohydrates, which tend to be refined and processed. There's sugars, there's high fructose corn syrup, and these are the nutrients that wreak havoc on our metabolism. When you consume fat, it doesn't affect metabolism like carbohydrates. Protein affects it to a lesser extent, but not like the carbohydrates.
If we eat whole natural foods, then what if somebody eats a lot of whole wheat? What if someone eats a lot of unprocessed bulgur and corn? What if people eat whole grains and whole potatoes and whole sweet potatoes? What if people eat foods like that?
So, Shelley, what you're referring to is some of the recommendations from the traditional dietary guidelines, and that is that these are indeed whole foods. Unfortunately, these whole foods contain carbohydrates. The government, the food industry, they have a terrible habit of doing the following. They look at particular foods and they say, so flour, processed white flour, is bad. We all agree that it has a negative impact. It has a high glycemic index. It has a high glycemic load. So we probably should avoid that. But then let's look at whole grain. So whole grain, it has a lower glycemic index. Its glycemic load is perhaps less. So this must not be as bad as white flour. And I agree with that. But what the food industry says is, since whole grain is better, it must be good. In fact, we may call it healthy. Let's call it a superfood. And this is the problem. And this is what the food industry has gotten into, this terrible pattern. And we buy into it as Americans. And the argument here is that a carbohydrate is a carbohydrate. And one might be slightly better than the other, but certainly one is not considered a superfood in my book.
You don't recommend that your patients eat a lot of whole grains?
No. If they have a need or if they're stuck, a whole grain is definitely perhaps a lesser of two evils. Therefore, if they eat some, they shouldn't eat a lot. But in our book, it's certainly not a healthy food choice. In fact, the same question came up last year when I gave my lecture to my daughter's middle school. And one of the questions in the end from the student was, well, we had learned in health class about all these superfoods. And Dr. Gerber, what do you think about whole grains? And I had to stop for a minute because I didn't want to say anything that was against what the teacher has said. And I basically said what I had told you, that although I don't consider it a superfood, it's definitely a better choice than eating white flour.
Now, it does seem like some people can eat a very low-fat, very high-carb diet and be incredibly healthy and vibrant throughout their lives.
Well, I would say that you're describing only a third of the population. That is the third of the population that don't necessarily have a problem with weight issues. But guess what? They are potentially at risk for the same problems of diabetes and heart disease if they continue to eat carbohydrates throughout their lifetime. I have focused on obesity, overweight, prediabetes, diabetes in my practice, along with general family medicine, which is where I originally come from. But I focus on that because obesity and overweight now affects two-thirds of our population. We have this remaining third that don't have this weight issue.
How did you get started into looking at food and nutrition and metabolism for helping people's health? No offense, but that's not what most doctors look at.
That's correct. And I think I went through the first 10 years of my career, and now I've been doctoring for over 20 years, blind, going along with mainstream. What they told me is what I did. I became frustrated about 10 years ago, and I kind of felt like I was spinning my wheels. I'd see patients coming in, and they're overweight. They're sick, they have medical problems, they're on multiple medications, and then I'm supposed to give them more medications and tell them to go lose weight or go exercise, and nothing changes, and then they get heart attacks and they get type 2 diabetes, and I call it spinning my wheels. We eat the way they tell us, either a low-fat, low-calorie diet or a failed diet, the standard American diet, and they go to the gym and they exercise, and they exercise, and they don't lose weight. And again, it's the same thing with medicine. I've just been spinning my wheels for the first 10 years, and I said, something's wrong with nutrition.
Well, you started thinking that it might be nutrition and changing someone's nutrition that could change their health and make them better. But I'm puzzled why you didn't think more medicines would help. Every single news release I read about a brand new breakthrough in science when it has to do with health ends with a paragraph that says, we're hopeful that this will lead to a new drug that will finally solve this problem.
So it's so typical of Americans who are looking for that magic bullet, that immediate answer, that immediate gratification. We work hard, we live in a wonderful country, and we're entitled. Unfortunately, when it comes to our health, it just doesn't work that way. it really brings us back to nutrition.
When you decided to shift from emphasizing medicines to try to help people with obesity or diabetes or heart disease to nutrition, what kind of nutrition did you choose?
My patients helped me choose the right kind of nutrition. Back in the late 90s, people came in and they were on various types of glycemic index and or low carb diets. One particular patient had come in on the Suzanne Summers diet. At the time, I said that I was concerned, like every other physician, that this high fat diet was going to elevate your cholesterol and you would be more likely to develop a heart attack and stroke, although you'd lose weight. Even though I said that, that didn't quite make sense to me, because losing weight seems to be a healthy thing. So why should it be unhealthy to lose weight? And so what I proceeded to do was to follow these patients out of pure curiosity. And we looked at their cardiometabolic markers, and lo and behold, they got better.
Their bad cholesterol went down, their triglycerides went down, their good cholesterol, the healthy HDL went up. Their inflammation markers, C-reactive proteins, went down?
That's correct, Shelley. All the markers got better.
And they were eating a high-fat diet?
They were eating a high-fat diet. And since 1999, we really have new science looking at these cardiometabolic markers, such as lipid profiles. And one of the original concerns about high-fat diets was that it would slightly elevate the LDL cholesterol. And in some, we still see that happening. But nowadays, the total LDL or the calculated cholesterol has significantly less meaning. We now look at the ratio of HDL to triglycerides. We look at LDL particle size.
Well, that's right. There's something about having big fluffy cholesterol in your blood is way different than having little tiny BBs of cholesterol in your blood. Which one's the dangerous one?
The dangerous ones are the small, dense pattern B LDL particles. And the healthy ones, as you said, are these pattern A. They're fluffy, buoyant particles. We used to think that, well, LDL, total LDL, was bad. But we've now discovered that you can further break down the LDL particles as well as HDL particles and look at the health benefit. And it turns out that these fluffy pattern A particles are good for you. And when you go on a low-carb, high-fat diet, in virtually 100% of the patients, when we measure it, they always have the healthy pattern A LDL, whether the total LDL went up or down.
Jeff Gerber, many medical doctors, many institutions would say that those high-fat diets are a good way to lose weight. But once you've lost the weight, go back to a normal way of eating. Do you agree?
Well, I disagree. Why should we go back and just resume the unhealthy lifestyle that the federal government is telling us to do? We'd like to see long-term studies regarding low-carb, high-fat diets compared to, say, low-fat, low-calorie diets. At this time, we only have very well done head-to-head studies that go out over 2 years. And what those head-to-head studies are demonstrating is that low-carb, high-fat diets over a two-year period of time cause a greater and sustained weight loss and a better improved cardiometabolic marker. The cardiometabolic marker suggests to us that this may have a long-term benefit. So why should we stop doing it? Until we have more longitudinal long-term data, we have to look at the best evidence that we have today. And that evidence tells us that low-carb, high-fat diets cause more weight loss and are healthier.
And not just as a diet to lose weight, you mean as a way to live.
That's correct. And that brings up a great issue. I find it quite frustrating that back in the 1960s, the federal government, through Medicare and Medicaid, when it started, made a decision. It was apparent to them, and incorrectly so, that obesity was brought on by the individual, that this was a lifestyle issue, that Medicare was not going to be responsible for paying for the treatment of obesity. And at this point, we have the separation where we have our wonderful healthcare system. I'm saying that a little sarcastically. And obesity, which is not going to be covered under the healthcare system because of apparent behavior issues. And people are responsible to take care of this on their own. And look where it's gotten us. Obesity rates have now doubled since 1980 in adults and tripled in children since 1980. So this isn't working. Obesity is not a behavioral disease. Obesity is a metabolic disease, and it needs to be appropriately cared for by healthcare professionals who understand it.
Who understand it. You know, there's a lot going on in what you just said. In a way, obesity is called a character disease. It's a disease of someone's character where they can't figure out the right thing to eat and exercise enough to keep from being obese. I hear you saying that if it's a metabolic disease, it's something where our hormone signals get messed up so that we get hunger signals and we get low energy signals in ways that are very confusing and make it hard to have any willpower for switching things around. It starts to feed itself as a very confused system because the signals go all wrong.
I couldn't agree with you more, Shelley. One of my favorite data detectives, Gary Taubes, puts it so eloquently. He refers to two of the deadly sins, that of gluttony and sloth. So this goes back hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, that this is apparently a lifestyle or a behavioral issue. And it's wrong. It's incorrect. This is where the scientists got the notion that if you eat fat, you're going to get fat. If you eat less and you exercise more, you're going to lose weight. But unfortunately, it sounds good, but unfortunately, that's not how metabolism works. Metabolism, again, is related to hormonal signals that decide whether we're hungry, whether we're not hungry. The more carbohydrates we eat, the more it elevates one particular hormone known as insulin. There are many hormones. There's leptin, there's ghrelin, there's PYY, and many more. There's peptide hormone signals coming from fat cells. But the one that we talk most often about is insulin because people know a little bit about it. A little bit of insulin is a good thing. A lot of it's a bad thing. And the more carbohydrates you consume, the more insulin. And imagine a lifetime of bombarding your body with dietary carbohydrates. Your insulin is elevated. It promotes weight gain. It's fattening. It's inflammatory. And our dietary guidelines tell us to eat more carbohydrates. And again, fat and protein doesn't affect insulin in this way. And that's a very simple explanation of metabolism.
Sugar increases the chance that cells will get confused about the hormones coming at them, that they'll become resistant to signals such as insulin. And fat and protein don't seem to do that as much. So what kind of diet do you recommend for people?
So what we recommend to patients is, number one, to reduce carbohydrates, especially refined and processed carbohydrates in the diet, and increase fat. It's basically the reverse of the dietary guidelines. Again, when you understand insulin metabolism, fat is a good thing. We're talking a diet initially with our patients, and everybody's different, but essentially it's 60% fat based on calories, 30% protein. And the idea is that we want to increase protein because the dietary guidelines from the federal government have told us to reduce protein. So some protein's good, and then very little carbohydrate.
I'm going to do some addition here. 60% fat in terms of calories, 30% protein, 3 plus 6 is 9. 90% of calories from these sources, which mean only 10% of calories from carbohydrates, starches, sugar, potatoes, rice, pasta, only 10% of calories from those kind of foods.
That's correct. And what's really important to understand is that carbohydrate is an optional fuel. We can live without it. And we have patients that have been on low-carb diets for 10 plus years, and they're doing just fine. The body, our genetics, we were designed to regulate blood sugar and energy in our body.
Blood sugar is sugar, though, and everybody needs some degree of sugar in their blood to even live. How do we get sugar in our blood if we're not eating carbohydrates and sugars?
We need sugar to survive, and the body has figured it out.
But if we don't put any in, or if we put in only 10% of calories as sugar, how does the body make enough to keep going?
It's very smart, and it does it through regulation of these complex metabolic pathways. One source is the protein that we consume, and another source is the fat we consume.
You mean that our bodies, if they need to, can make sugar?
Well, we can definitely make it out of protein. Fat is another story. We don't directly convert fat to sugar, but there's another source of energy in our body that we don't talk about much, and that is from fat and through beta oxidation and the production of ketone bodies, which is another wonderful source of energy. In fact, it may be the preferred source of energy because it is as we have body fat on our body, we can burn it. It's sustainable. It doesn't come in spurts. What we try to do is switch patients over to utilizing body fat or saturated fat or any fat in the diet for energy because it is, again, more sustainable versus dietary carbohydrates. So we have ketone bodies from fat. We have protein, which can also be converted to energy into glucose, and that's another source. But what's important to understand is that fat and protein are essential. We cannot live without fat and protein in our diet. We can live without carbohydrates, and yet the government tells us to reduce the amount of fat in our diet and protein and eat more carbohydrates, which we can live without anyway. Isn't something wrong with that?
Well, there does seem to be something wrong with recommendations in that most Americans are struggling with being overweight and chronic diseases are up. And if there's any tie-in at all to what we eat as part of this, that implies that maybe there's a different way and a better way to eat. Now, how about your patients who come to you and you give them this kind of advice? What happens to them?
Most of the patients lose weight and it's a wake-up call and it's just a wonderful message that they have found a new way to improve their health. Most of them are frustrated because they tried the old guidelines and they don't work long term.
So for the people who come to you, many of them find this other way of eating does work. How about this? How about if they eat this high fat, low carb diet 5 days a week, and then on the weekends, they have some cheesecake, and they have some pizza, and they have a big fruit salad, and then they go back to eating the way that you want them to for 5 days a week, and they only shift away from it on the weekend. Does it work that way?
It doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, it's going to fail, and patients such as those are really treating the recommendations as just another fad diet. Clearly, this isn't a fad diet. There's arguments that we have been eating this way, a high-fat diet, for hundreds, thousands, if not millions of years.
But if you eat the way that you recommend for 5 days out of seven, why won't it work? Isn't it safe to shift away from it now and then? And won't it work mostly if you mostly do it?
Well, I've heard some arguments from Lauren Cordain that he has these 80-20, 80-15 rules that 80% of the time, if you stick to the guidelines, that you're probably going to go in the right direction. But I don't like that recommendation because the idea is that you really have to focus on your health long term. What are your goals? Do you want to enjoy your life as disease-free as possible, less visits to the doctor, less visits to the hospital, or do you want to be sick and not thriving? And so the goal here is to make people feel wonderful and enjoy life to the fullest. If you want to indulge, it's your choice. But I think long-term, it's the wrong way to go.
You know, there's some discussions and some thought that to become a fat burner, a body that burns fat instead of carbohydrates, doesn't happen overnight. It can take 1 week. For some people, it can take 2 weeks or 3 weeks because it's a metabolism that the body adapts to slowly. And that eating carbohydrates, the body adapts to that within hours. And so among some experts, there's some fear that if people once a week or once every 2 weeks decide to break out of their high-fat, low-carb eating and have that ice cream cone or have that bowl of pasta, they're never really getting adapted to burning fat. Do you think there's some truth to that?
I think you're referring to Steve Finney, who has made these comments. In fact, he's an example where he's been on a low-carb diet for 15, 20 years, and he's a biochemist, if I understand it correctly.
I think that he is a bunch of things. He's a medical doctor, and he did study nutrition at MIT when they gave nutrition degrees to people at MIT.
Yeah, and so he's dedicated his career to this. He says that if you start introducing carbohydrates into your diet, once you are keto adaptive, it's called, the body has learned to preferentially use ketones for energy, and then you reintroduce carbohydrates, the body will turn off and start to look for fuel from carbohydrates, and you'll begin to gain weight. So I think there's different opinions about it. I also think it's important to say is that you have to try to do what's practical for you. To do any of these recommendations every day of your life is impractical. But you have to look at this benefit-risk relationship. And some individuals can consume more carbohydrates than others. Some people have a hard time losing weight, even if they're on a low-carb diet. So you have to be persistent with these people. And I think genetically, we all have a body set. So some individuals are going to have more body fat than others. And especially females who were genetically engineered to rear children and to have an extra supply of energy as body fat on board for child rearing. Women should have more body fat, but unfortunately, in our society, that's not the way we see it, and that's unfortunate.
Well, they should have more body fat, but at the same time, are we genetically engineered to be obese as something that all of us are meant to be?
No, we're not genetically engineered to be obese, and that's not the point that we're trying to make, but just that it's different for everybody.
You know what, though, Jeff Gerber, there are scientists and medical people and health people who will say that in a world of plenty, it's inevitable that we're all going to become obese because our bodies were not genetically engineered to live with enough food around. We were designed to always have times of famine to kind of reset the thermostat. Do you think that that's the issue, or do you think that we're in an unhealthy food environment right now?
There's some great movies out there that you remind me of. Not only are we supposed to be overweight or fat, we're also supposed to be stupid. That just reminds me of some of these wonderful movies that predict the future for us. And all I can say about that is that if we continue to eat industrialized foods, refined and processed foods, there will be a fattening of our country. What we're proposing is redefining healthy nutrition so we don't head in that direction. We can do whatever we want. We can eat whatever we want. And I think for those of us intelligent enough to step back and look at what's going on, to look at the science and to understand what are the problems with nutrition, once you understand it, it becomes obvious that you're going to make some change.
Once your clients have lost weight and they're still sticking to eating the way that you've recommended, they don't change. They just stay with the high fat, low carb, higher protein, but especially high fat diet. Do they feel hungry and do they have good energy?
Well, I can give you an anecdotal story. I wish I could give you scientific evidence that I've done years and years of research, but as a practicing family doctor, I have anecdotes and I'm trying to put some of the data together. In fact, I've kept a database for over 10 years. And so I have a patient, Pat. He's given me permission to publish his story on my website, denversdietdoctor.com. When he initially lost the weight, the best comment that he made was, "Dr. Gerber, I didn't know that I could lose weight by eating. I'm never hungry." And it's now been 2+ years, and he's still not hungry.
How's his energy?
He's involved in track and field events, and so his energy is better than ever. I think he lost 40+ pounds. Don't hold me to that, but he lost a significant amount of weight and he's still continuing to. Yeah. Pat is still eating a low-carb, high-fat diet and he feels great.
I'm Shelley Schlender. We've been talking with Jeff Gerber. He's a family physician who specializes in weight loss and the treatment of heart disease and diabetes. For many of his patients, Dr. Gerber recommends a high-fat, low-carb diet. You can find out more about Jeff at his website, denversdietdoctor.com. For more discussions like this, check out my website, which is meandmydiabetes.com.